Good morning. I now call to order this reopened public hearing on the Land Use Planning Commission on Big Lake Development Company LLC's application for Amendment F to Development Permit DP 3639. The applicant's proposal is for the proposed redevelopment of the Big Moose Ski Resort in Big Moose Township, Maine. The purpose of the reopened hearing is to receive testimony and evidence from the applicant intervenor regarding the testimony and evidence offered today must be limited to the current proposal before the commission as described in the application, the topic of financial capacity, and the commission's criteria and standards applicable to that topic. This hearing is being conducted in accordance with the Maine Administrative Procedures Act and the commission's Chapter 5 Governing Public Hearings. My name is Everett Worcester. I am the chair and presiding officer in this hearing. And now I'd like my fellow staff and staff to introduce themselves.
County.
Betsy Fitzgerald, Washington County.
Caleb Elwell, counsel to the board.
Stacy Byer, acting executive director for the LEPC.
Gwen Hilton, Somerset County.
Peter Parry, Penobscot County.
And we have three commissioners who are participating remotely. Lee Smith.
Lee Smith, Oxford County.
Millard Billings.
Millard Billings, Hancock County.
And Bill.
Bill Gilmore, Franklin County.
This hearing is being recorded. All witnesses at this hearing will be sworn and it's presented during the testimony must be entered into the record. At this time, I ask all persons planning to testify today to please stand and raise their right hand. Do you affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. May be seated. This hearing will commence with a brief project introduction from commission staff, followed by testimony relevant to the financial capacity review criteria and standards for the applicant, and then from the limited intervenor. The commission and staff may ask questions of any party at any time. Cross-examination by the parties will commence after the direct testimony of both parties is complete, with the applicant first, followed by the limited intervenor. At this time, the commission staff will provide a project introduction. Debbie?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Deborah Kozowski, and I'm a regional supervisor with the commission. As the chair indicated, this hearing is being held to receive testimony from the applicant and a limited intervener on a proposal for the redevelopment of the Big Moose Ski Resort in Big Moose Township, Piscataquis County. On June 7th, 2022, the commission held the hearing in the matter of Big Lake Development Company LLC's pending application for Amendment F to Development Permit DP 3639. At the regular business meeting of the commission on July 13th, 2022, the commission voted to reopen the public hearing for the limited purposes of obtaining additional evidence on the topic of financial capacity. The hearing record will remain open until August 20th, 2022 at 5 p.m. to allow the parties of the hearing and members of the public to file written statements on the topic of financial capacity and evidence presented at the reopened hearing with the commission, and until August 27th, 2022 at 5 p.m. to close file. I would like to update the hearing record, which now includes 111 exhibits. Each of the commission members has a list of these exhibits. Copies of the list are available to you upon request, and all materials are also available electronically.
I now ask the applicant to provide its testimony and evidence. And let me ask you, Mr. Williams, are you with us remotely?
I'm right here in front of you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Perry.
Perry. Oh, we get two Perrys.
Yes.
Please proceed. Thank you. Thanks. Good morning, commissioners. Again, I'm Perry Williams. I'm with Big Lake Development Company. And I'm, if I understand, I have about 15 minutes. Okay, because this is not a simple funding, but I'm going to try and summarize it so that, and then I'm wide open to questions and try to answer. It took us quite a while to come to this type of structure after looking at all the, I'd call standard ways to finance a project like this. It is not a simple process. It's not something that the banks will fund. Ski area redevelopments are unique that way. So after it, I'm basically just going to summarize what I already sent in writing, but after looking at all these different structures, new market tax credits, opportunity zones, commercial banks, private lenders, private investors in the local community, we were introduced to a company called Provident Resources Group, and they have done these type of tax-free municipal bond projects for the last 30 plus years. They've done $4.5 billion worth of these type of projects. And it started with them, and then they introduced us to Barclays Capital, which is the bond underwriter in this project. And it's all wrapped around this tax-free structure that Provident Resources has been using for all of these $4.5 billion doing around the country. They like this one, they want to do this one, and it started there when we went and met with the county commissioners in Piscataquis County and explained how it worked, and needed the county commissioners to sign a resolution that says, yes, indeed, this lessens the burden of government, because the county doesn't have to do it if Provident doesn't, and it creates economic opportunity. And those are really the criteria for Provident to enter into these kind of structures. So Barclays came on board, they took a look at everything we've done, and they said, yeah, we like it as well. And the part of the reason for the tax-free structure is that it lowers the borrowing cost by about 250 basis points, which is important for a big project like this. The lower interest rates you can pay, the better. And so that's how it all came together. Again, I've been doing this for 4 years now. We've looked at every single, we've talked to the state and the county and, you know, all these federal programs, and it seems like there's a lot of federal money right now, you know, out available for different economic growth projects, especially the new market tax credit. We spent a lot of time on that, and CBI Capital didn't get an allocation. We were their top project. We thought that would have been a great fit because of the jobs created and because of the economic benefit that comes from it. And that's really the core of this project is bringing back an old ski area. How do you do that? And what does that take? That's where it all started, is looking at what's there now, trying to figure out what would make it viable. You can't just put in a chairlift and say, okay, we can open now, because you don't have the support for that. There's no base. You guys saw that facility now. You can't use the base lodge. You can't use the hotel. You can't use the sewer system. You can't use the snowmaking system. So putting in a new chairlift alone isn't enough. That's the first step. It's an important step, and that's what the state of Maine wants to happen. That's why the state of Maine has been suing the current owner to open it up again and to put in a chair. And that's what everybody wants, open up the top of the mountain, get it open. So once you dig into that and you really look at what does that take? What does that really mean? That's what the bond market through Barclays requires, is a full-blown analysis of all the costs. Because the way this funding structure works is these tax-free municipal bonds are sold to institutional buyers that Barclays is in contact with.
So before they go out to the marketplace and start to sell these bonds, we all need to know, what is all this cost? And so that starts with the master planning that we've done. The feasibility studies come behind that. The market studies come behind that. Really looking at the actual costs. And once we developed a master plan, and we did that in conjunction with a company called the SE Group, Snow Engineering. They're a 55-year-old ski area development company. Actually started by the guy who cut the trails on this mountain, Sal Hanna, started SE Group. And this is what they do. So they came in, they took a look, and they said, okay, you know, what do you need for lift capacity? What do you need for trail capacity? What do you need for snowmaking? What do you need for parking? What do you need for bathrooms? You have to have those things to open a ski area. So we did all that analysis, and then we went to a feasibility study with a company called CB Richard Ellis out of New York. They had just done a hotel study for Greenville that was commissioned by the Hoosier Lake Economic Development Commission, showing there's a need for a hotel in the Greenville area. One of the key contributors to that study was that, yeah, there's a need for a hotel if the ski area opens again. So the two fit together very well. It needs a hotel, it needs it can't survive by just putting in a chairlift and some snowmaking and pay for all those things. And that's what it really all comes back to, is how do you pay for all these things? What do they cost, and how do you pay? So that's what we've been doing for the last really 2 years with Mark Lace and Provident, is trying to determine all that. One of the key points in the process was when we brought on a company called PC Construction, used to be Pisa Galley, now they're company owned, employee owned, they're called PC. They have an amazing estimating department. They dove in to every single facet of our plan and helped us figure out, what is all this really gonna cost? Because we had rough estimates, I'd say. You know, you can figure out what a hotel costs by going on the internet and figuring out per room cost per hotel. But to drill down and get to the real costs, this estimating exercise, I'll call it, it's over a $200,000 exercise to figure out these costs. It's probably 600 pages of cost estimating to figure out all these costs, starting with the chairlift, but then go into the hotel, go into the base lodge. So all that needs architectural design, all that needs, what's the hotel going to look like? How big is it? How many rooms does it have? How big should the rooms be? So all that with our architects was handed over to the construction firm, and they priced it all out. And some of that's a moving target, but what the bond market requires is what they call guaranteed max pricing. Because when the bonds are sold, everything needs to be paid for. This isn't a, oh, we'll start with this and see how you're doing, and then we'll give you some more money. No, this is all funded at once. Every piece of everything that's in this application is funded fully on day one with the bond package. So they really need to know what it's gonna cost, because there, you can't go back for another million. It has to be contracted with your vendors, who's gonna build what, who's gonna sell us the chairlift, and the chairlift prices keep changing and all that. And so we came down to a bottom line budget. They kept digging into it more and more, the prices. That's why you see numbers change as we've submitted different cost numbers, because things, the more detail you get, the more you reduce the contingencies. That's really the idea in a cost estimating exercise, is you can throw a big 10, 15, 20% contingency on it, but you want to narrow that down and you want to get under 10% contingency. So you really know you're going to fund everything properly and you're not going to be left short. And so the feasibility study takes all that and runs it out for 30 years and says, okay, if you do this, 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 and this, and you open for skiing and you open for, you know, the dark sky tourism that we want to do, and you have mountain biking and you have the zip line and you have all these components, that we factored in, which are all critical to the bottom line. Ski areas have a very hard time these days, only operating in the winter. That used to be, you know, I grew up here in Maine. I skied Mount Abram, Sunday River as a kid, Shawnee Peak. You could run just in the winter and lay your staff off and come back next fall and do it again. Well, over time, that's changed. I chairlift for $1 million. Now they're $8 million. I mean, everything's cost more, as we all know. And so you have to be, in our opinion, and in all our planning, it really needs to be a four-season resort. It has to have, not only to keep your staff on, I mean, Sugarloaf goes up to 1,000 employees and back down to about 200. And that's hard. I mean, that's a, you know, bring all those people in and lay them all off and bring them all back again. Sugarloaf, Sunday River, Saddleback, they're all trying to grow into the four seasons, I'd say, right? I mean, but Sugarloaf doesn't have much going on in the four season in the summertime. They have a golf course. They have mountain biking's really picking up now. But nobody has a lake like this property does. It just access to that lake is the key to it, to make it a true four-season resort. Step two of that is having enough beds up on the mountain, having enough people involved in the whole thing. And I will tell you, that's why Saddleback struggled for so long. I've been working in Saddleback in Rangeley for the last 22 years and watched that very closely. I actually worked up at Saddleback. I have all their appraisals. I have all their financials. And it's tough just to be a winter ski area, a really good one. It's tough. And the reason Sugarloaf does so well is they have a lot of condos. They have a lot of houses. They have that big hotel. So that people want to come up and stay on the mountain. They don't want to stay in town, go skiing all day and go back downtown. Or they really don't want to drive from Portland to Greenville or to Sugarloaf or to Saddleback, ski all day, turn around, drive home. It's kind of too far for a day drive ski area. You know, Shawnee Peak does okay because they got the Portland market that can drive up there, go skiing, turn around, go home. These more remote locations, which are, you know, more, I will say, more climate resistant in the long term, need beds. It needs people. And that's what creates the jobs, and that's what creates the opportunity for everybody. And that's what this whole plan has been focused on. So, you know, the financing has been an evolving target, and we finally settled in on this structure. And I'll say that another thing about the commitment letter from Barclays, they don't give commitment letters. Ever since the Great Recession, before the recession, they were handing out commitment letters, and this is what Barclays has told me, is they got in trouble doing that because the economy changed, the markets changed, they couldn't sell those bonds anymore, and they had these commitments hanging out there, and they got in legal trouble. So now the lawyers at Barclays, which is a big group, it's a 330-year-old institution, it's a $1.5 trillion market cap. They want to do this project, but they're not going to give me a commitment letter until these permits are secure. They just don't do that. I mean, this is a process. They want to know that the town supports it. They want to know the state supports it. They're not going to come in and fund a project that doesn't have support locally. And all along, we felt we've had support locally. Everybody we've met with, we started with, who said Lake Economic Development Group, I started with LUPC and DEP 4 years ago. And we looked at all this, and Stacy, you know, we met with you multiple times in pre-application meetings, kind of laying out the plan. This is what it's going to take, and this is how it works, and it's a process. And you don't get the, you don't, if it were a bank loan, yeah, maybe they'd give you a commitment letter to build a house, right? But it's not. It's much more complex than that. So it's, you know, I can go into a lot of detail if you'd like. I put some of it in my testimony there and in my pre-file testimony and how it's structured. It's common in this tax-free municipal marketplace. It's unique here for Maine. And, you know, we've explained it to the governor. We've explained it to the Economic Development Commission. We've explained it to everybody around that wanted to hear about it. And, you know, everybody's on board. That's why FAME's on board. Bain took a look at it and said, yeah, this qualifies, this works. They're simply the issuer of the bonds. There's no financial liability for anybody in the state of Maine. The financial liability with this goes to the bond buyers. People buy these bonds for the return. Is that my time?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I said, I can go on for hours, but I'll stop.
Anyone have any questions at this point?
Thanks for that explanation.
You're welcome.
That was very helpful. Is it, and I'm not sure this is a question for you or for our staff. I mean, is it possible that, I think I understand what you're saying about the Barclays aren't going to give you a commitment letter at this time until after it's been permitted. I mean, when we write a decision, say we approve this, can't we say that we approve it on the condition that a commitment letter is received from Barclays?
Yeah, we actually do that frequently because it's often that a bank won't issue a commitment letter until a permit's in hand. And courts have considered this issue multiple times. Courts recognize that we don't want to set kind of a catch-22 situation where, you know, we need a commitment letter, but the commitment letter from the bank won't come until a permit is issued. So it's often handled by condition.
Yeah. Okay.
That's just the reality of the funding mechanism.
Leo?
Am I correct that this is a revenue bond and not an obligation bond?
It is a revenue bond.
Okay.
Yes.
So the revenues are going to be derived over the cash flows from the proceeds?
A combination of all the different cash flows.
Okay. And I guess my next question is to legal counsel, and that is, to what extent is the commission obligated to, I guess, or have a fiduciary responsibility in order to go through the numbers, if you will, of the applicant?
Well, I guess I would say the commission's duty is to statutory that require statutory criteria add financial ability to meet our to finish the permit, and not a lot of legal rules on exactly how it's supposed to go about that. But
my question, and I have this right, Bain is going to be, Barclays is going to be the broker,
underwriter,
dealer, the underwriter.
Yep.
Maybe a number for dealers, because Barclays won't sell them all, I'm assuming.
No, they will.
They will. They have the
market. They're the sole underwriter for the senior, the junior, and the third. There's three tiers of bonds.
God, I understand. And based on that, then the residents of Maine will not be liable should a bankruptcy occur.
Absolutely not. It's the buyers of the bonds. The buyers of the bonds take a look at this.
I still have my license as a broker.
Okay. So you probably know more about it than I do. And I've learned a lot working with Barclays and Provident throughout this whole process. But Barclays is the key to saying their desk says, yeah, we've looked at this, we've read all the studies, and this 30-year plan meets our debt coverage ratios. That's really what they're looking for. Do we meet our debt coverage ratios? And they're different for each tier of those bonds, right? And so it's a minimum of a 2.0 debt coverage ratio. So not only get a debt back once, it can pay it back twice.
Right.
That's what they look for. That's not our number. That's the study's numbers. And so we hired a firm that Barclays works with and recommends, CB Richard Ellis, a worldwide firm, to take a look at those numbers. And so At the end of the day, it's the bond buyers themselves that are taking the risk and trying to get that return, like any investment.
Understood. Thank you.
Lee Smith?
I just got muted again. I have a couple very practical near-term questions and then sort of a broader issue. In terms of the near-term, how long do you think one thing that concerns me looking at it is the amount of demolition you're going to have to do before you can start building the ski area. How much do you think the demolition is going to cost and how long is it going to take? Do you have an idea?
I do. Yeah, we've estimated that, and we've done a hazardous building materials inspection, which was step one to see what's in those old buildings and how do you tear it down. I had to burn it down, but they won't let me. It has to be. I thought that would be a good start. But you have to tear it down. You have to take out any of the hazardous building materials. That's about $150,000, and that's about a two-month job. And then you can knock it down, haul it away, probably to Norwich Walk, I think, is where they settled. And that's about another $350,000. So all in, it's about $500,000, and it's probably 6 months, 5 to 6 months to take everything. And that's, you know, that's the old hotel, the base lodge, and the restaurant that's up.
Thank you. It's not as big a number as I was afraid there would be. My broader question is the interactions between all these pieces. One, as I understand it, you're going to be building the ski area, the lodge, and condos on the mountain. But in addition to that, you are expecting there to be a lot of second home construction because of the ski area. Is that right? And you will get tax increments on that. Who owns the land that you expect? I'm trying to get an idea of how confident are you that someone is going to sell and someone's going to want to build those. I think it was like 400 additional second homes.
Correct. So I'm not sure of your question, but.
Well, what's the basis for the estimate? That there's a demand for that, and that's the landowners are happy to sell.
Okay, the basis for the demand is the market and feasibility studies that have been done. So those looked at, I think, started with really the Plum Creek analysis that was done 10, 12 years ago and rolled forward. I mean, Plum Creek was going to do over 2,000 residential units in the greater. This is under 500. So it's a quarter of what Plum Creek was going to do. And it's in the place that is properly zoned for it. So it's a lot of the market analysis based on the beautiful views and the ability to ski in, ski out. That comes from our experience in the industry. I built different projects in Sugar Loaf. One ski in, ski out, one is not. The ski in, ski out is a lot more popular and sells a lot more quickly. That's what skiers want. I'm a lifelong skier. Skiing back to your condo or home and taking a break in the middle of the day and, you know, getting warmed up and going back out is unbelievably nice. It's almost another sport versus coming in the car and going to the base lodge and ski. You know, it's still skiing, but boy, it's awful nice to come back to your place on the mountain. So that a lot of what we've designed and we've laid out to see the six neighborhoods is based on. And so that's where our
Shannon are taking very good
time is the. The access to the resources. And we've included, we've split up these neighborhoods like we've shown LUBC and DEP so that it involves everyone, not just skiers. And in particular, snowmobilers. And because of the project that I built in Rangeley, we see a lot of demand for snowmobiles to have a place to ride in, ride out, right from their home. Snowmobiling is a huge marketplace in Maine. It's one of those specialty things that you can only do in these kind of big woods areas with the trail network in place. You can't do it at your home in Falmouth. You can't do it in southern New Hampshire, Massachusetts. You have to come up here to do it. And so we want to welcome them. So we created actually two neighborhoods just for them so that they're not ski and ski up across the accident. To increase our market share and to allow us to sell to a wider group of people, not just skiers. That's number one. Number two, I think in your question is, will we own the land? And the answer is yes, if we can get this done in a timely manner. The current owner wants to sell it. We've had 20 extensions with him. 20. He's anxious to sell. He wants to sell now. He didn't want to sell in the past. When I first met him, he didn't want to sell. He didn't want to sell to Plum Creek. He didn't want to sell to Libra. He didn't want to sell to some local people who wanted to buy this years ago. He just loves his land. He wants to keep it. And if we don't buy it, he's just going to keep it. So he wants to sell it. We have a contract with him to buy it. So this development group combined with this nonprofit would own the land to build on.
Thank you. I have one last and probably the toughest question, which is the interaction with the marina. If the marina were not approved, does that create major problems?
Not a major cash flow problem, but what we look for is lake access. We want the owners and the guests up at the mountain to get out on the lake, whether it's in a boat or a kayak or go swimming. We want lake access. And that's why when the state of Maine owned this property, they deed restricted the marina parcel to the mountain parcel. They cannot be split. Otherwise, it would have been done already. So I know who would have split that off and sold it. It can't be split. And in the deed, when the state of Maine owned this and ran it for a dozen years, when they sold it, they said, this parcel on the lake needs to, and it had a marina permit. The state gave this parcel a marina permit. And they put in a boat launch and they put in some docks and they mooring. And then when they sold it, they put in the deed a restriction that said this parcel is really important to that mountain so that the two are always connected for public access and they need to stay together. So it's an important piece. Having a number of boat slips isn't the most important piece. It's having access to the lake. The marina.
Very much.
If I say one thing, the marina revenue streams are not big. So if it didn't have a big marina revenue stream, that doesn't kill the deal. It's the four season aspect. That's what's important. Moosehead Lake is an amazing resource and there's nothing like it. And having that in our marketing to say, look, if you own or come visit up here or recreate in this region, there's a way for you to go sailing or to go kayaking or to go fishing or to go swimming. So that's what it's about. And that's what Sugarloaf doesn't have, Sunday River doesn't have. So we're always looking for differentiators in that marketplace. And those are the things that drive a project like this to say that people will come because this is really unique. Not only do we have the dark sky, we have a lake, we have mountains, we have trails, we have fishing, we have hunting, we have snowmobiling, we have all of these activities that to allow people to get into the outdoors. That's what it's all about.
I can hear you. So, Perry, thank you for your presentation. I know you've put a ton of work into this. I know that it has a lot of merit locally and can be, if done properly, and you're successful, a huge benefit to the area. And I hope that can happen. I'm always nervous about jumping into huge projects like this with you or anyone else, doesn't matter who it is. And feeling that maybe We as commissioners haven't done our due diligence in making sure that this fits the bill, both economically for you folks and financially for those that invest in it. The last time that we talked, you hadn't made any headway with the sanitary district in Greenville, I don't think. Have you reached any decision with those folks as yet?
Yeah, Bill, we have. Well, they have capacity to take a certain amount of sewage from the project. Initially, they told us they could take it all. And then lately, they've sort of backed off of that, I think in part because of the new PFAS regulations and how they're going to dispose of their sewage. So at this point in time, we have an agreement. It's not in writing. It's a handshake agreement with the board at the Moosehead Sanitary District. If we connected the mountain via forced main, you know, pump stations to the town system or the municipal system, they could handle it. And in part because of the they lost a big customer. I'm not sure who it was, but there was an industrial customer that they had that closed down, and they lost. So they have capacity for. I don't have the number on top of my head, but they have a certain amount of capacity that would handle the hotel, the base lodge, and the T-bar lodge that's there now. They know they could do that. Second part of that is we've applied for some congressionally directed spending through Senator Collins and Senator King for $5.7 million, which is roughly the amount to connect from the mountain to town. And that just last week, the week before, was accepted by Senator Collins and by Senator King, both of them. It doesn't mean it's a done deal yet, but it made it through step one. So, you know, they have those earmarks where they're able to designate certain projects around the state. And so both Collins and King have been helpful here and supportive of this and saying, And I think Senator Collins is on that appropriations committee and might be really helpful in getting those funds for Greenville.
Any more questions, Bill?
As a follow-up, thank you, Perry. I guess what I think about that in that scenario is your expenses are running the line from the property down to the sanitary district. And once that goes down there, I assume that they probably charge you based on user rates. If they're unable to take what you hopefully can provide, if you build this out as you wish, then you're gonna have to go to a backup plan and create some other means of disposal on site, which number one, ties up real estate that could have been developable real estate. Number two, costs you more money to go down that road as well. So it's good to hear that you are making some headway with them. The thing that scares me, and I don't mean to say this in a negative sense, I go back to the days of Evergreen Valley and those resorts that wanted to be good neighbors and wanted to do good things, and for whatever reason were unable to do that. We don't need to create that in Greenville, Maine, and as much as people want to see this happen, we need to ensure that we're going to move forward and do it in a positive way and make it work. In my opinion, there can be no potential failure. Pure and simple.
So let me just address that real quick, Bill, that you're right in that if the municipal sanitary district cannot take all of the project's sewer, then we would have to design an on-site system for the balance of the disposal. We've discussed that with a couple of engineering firms. They've given us some basic pricing on doing that. We haven't contracted with them yet because it's expensive to have them look into what that would cost. But there is land available for it that is not developable land. And we've had wetland scientists take a look at that site and say, yes, it is would be acceptable for an on-site disposal system. It'd be a big system.
Yeah.
But
thank
it,
you.
It is. So you're welcome.
Perry. Perry Ellsworth.
Yep, I'm I just unmuted. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, my question is in the feasibility and the your other impact statements, those type of things, did you see any potential for other type business that might replace this business that you just spoke to Billy about?
I'm not sure I understand that question. Other business to replace the ski business?
We're having trouble understanding what you're asking. Could you ask it again? We can't hear you. You're muted.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay, so the question is that as Bill asked about the sewer, being able to go to the sewer plant, and you told us that that there would be that there's a possibility because some larger business is no longer going to that plant. Does any of your impact statement or your forecasting of what the future might look like include other major businesses winding up in the same place, going to the same plant?
Connecting to that sewer line, is that?
Yes, yes.
No. You know, this sewer line would run, when we've surveyed it out, you know, from the hotel down to Greenville Junction, and there would be the ability for property owners on the route, it's about 5 miles, to connect into that system if they would like to. I don't think they're required to by law. I think that, but if they wanted to do away with their own on-site system, which essentially is a good thing because it all flows into the lake, they could connect to this system at their own cost. But there's no other businesses along that 5 mile line.
Okay, thank you very much. I just had to move my computer because I'm up to Sugarloaf right now at a training session, and it was raining on my computer here. I'm not sure what's going on with the building, but I, you know, I'm hoping that you get the support of the community and I'm assuming, with my knowledge of how these things bonded, that the future will be good for everyone if we're able to move ahead with it. Thank you.
And Barry, I apologize for leaving you out when we were introducing the commissioners. You should have raised your hand and raised the ruckus. Anybody else at this time? That being the case, I now ask the limited intervener to provide his testimony and evidence. So as I understand it, Matthew Phillips is going to speak as an intervener.
Yes, not his. Thank you.
Please proceed. You have roughly 6 minutes.
Okay. I am Marcia Phillips, and I am here to speak today on behalf of Moosehead Region Teachers Committee. Commissioners, all of you, Commissioner Brewster, and Stacy and Deborah, thank you so much for having us here and for the work you put into this so far. Perry, clearly you put a lot of work into this too, and thank you. Thank you for the information you continue to share with us.
Well, appreciate that.
I will say that somewhere along the way, an email was sent to Deborah Kosowski, and it's the author. Unfortunately, I don't remember offhand who wrote this particular one, but the author indicated that the financial plan to support this proposed project is complex. And it is. This is a really ambitious undertaking. I think we all understand that. Our questions today focus on the applicant's capacity to finance the land purchase and redevelop proposed in phase one and outlined in permit 3639F. Questions are all the components of the development that can be reasonably foreseen included in the cost opinions provided? Are all the finances adequate and available to the applicant if the commission elects to grant this permit? Is the applicant's capacity to finance the land purchase and redevelopment proposed in phase one and outlined in the application independent of future development that is not incorporated in this permit? We're asking the questions because they need to be asked, and the answers aren't readily available to us in the public record. So, for example, we're learning things here, and it's our understanding that there have been discussions about potential future development with the DEP and some commissioners, apparently, from what you just said, for all of them. And I think maybe there may be information we are.
I'm having difficulty hearing
you. Okay, I'll speak up. Thank you.
Thank you.
The answers to these questions are more detailed responses than yes or no. This proposal requires an in-depth understanding about sophisticated financing mechanisms. Some of you may understand it, and some of us do not. There are multiple parties involved. There is Big Lake Development. There's Provident Resources Group. There's Fame. There's Piscataquis County. Treadwell Franklin. There's Barclays. There are contracts and agreements, senior, junior, and environmental grant bonds, taxable and tax-exempt bonds, references to a special entity business, a 501(c), low-profit business, limited liability companies. There are still outstanding questions about the wastewater disposal. And there are outstanding questions about how the debt service on the bonds is paid off. That's independent of income sources derived from future unpermitted development. It is complicated. We know that the commission has access to a number of resource specialists who support application reviews. You have wildlife and fisheries biologists, ecologists, entomologists, historians, hydrologists, geologists. You have a lot of people to help understand all of this. But for this application, we would argue that there should be a special financial review to make sure that, as Commissioner Worcester used the term in one of your last meetings, that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So what we will say is that if the commission, its staff, commissioners require outside expertise to aid in understanding how this all goes together, then we urge you to seek that. Some independent outside review. Ultimately, it is the applicant's responsibility to provide this complete, understandable information. You should not have to pull it out in order for the permit to be adequately represented, that the finances are clear. So it is really the commissioners and the staff who need to understand the complexity of the application, the proposed funding, in order to make a confident, informed decision as to the adequacy of the permit. We encourage you to ask the questions that need to be asked in order to understand how the pieces fit together for a multi-million dollar project. This is not small. It is complex. And I want to say at the end of this that Moosehead Region Futures does support redevelopment of the mountain. We have stated it in writing and we have said it in meetings. We do support it. We want to know that it is going to be done properly. We want to know that it will be financed properly. And we want to know that the financing isn't totally dependent on permits that may not be issued. I'm not saying, no one's saying that they won't be, but there should be independent financing in place for this to be a go. Again, we want to see that. Thank you.
Any questions? Will you intervene? Can you remotely have any questions at this point? I'll ask if the applicant would like to cross-examine the limited intervener.
Yes. Thanks, Marcia. I basically have one question. That is, if you are in support of this, why did you never call me and ask for an explanation? Because I'm happy to meet with you. I could spend all day explaining this. And then so it took us a long time to understand all this with all the legal counsel involved. So it is complex. I understand that. But why didn't you call me?
Perhaps we should have, but it still should be in the public record and in the application.
Okay. Again, I'm happy to meet with you and explain how it all works.
Thank you. I would love to take you up on that. Absolutely.
That's it for me.
I now ask if the limited intervener would like to cross-examine the applicant.
Yes, I would.
Please proceed.
Gary, you've seen the questions we prepared?
I have, yes.
Okay, all right. So I probably will not read them all verbatim. You're kind of long-winded. So thank you. I would like to start really kind of in the middle with question 12. Presumably, if FAME is on board with all of this, that presumably you could provide a copy of your tax exemption form. The IRS is a couple years behind, so we went to look and just check it off, and we could not access it. So it is not available.
So the answer is yes, Provident can supply that.
Provident can supply that.
Yep.
And that's through you? Or do we have to contact them separately?
I can request it from them.
Okay. Okay.
And but again, they've been doing this for almost 40 years.
I understand.
$4.5 billion worth. They have a special IRS exemption that allows them to continue to do this.
Okay.
So they wouldn't, we wouldn't be here if they couldn't do that.
Okay. Do you know that the IRS has made a ruling on whether or not operating, as you had stated in your pre-file testimony, acquiring 1,700 acres in Northern Maine, financing, redeveloping, owning, and operating the property as the new Moosehead Lake Mountain Resort is a tax-exempt activity?
But so far, the lawyers say yes. We're using two law firms, one here in the state of Maine, Bernstein Shore, and the other one from Denver called Kutak Rock.
Okay.
And they specialize in these structures, and we've been on dozens of conference calls with both of those law firms. They've invested a lot of time and money in this, and the answer is yes. They feel confident that this meets the IRS standards to be a nonprofit operation.
Okay. Have you asked for a ruling?
No, not yet. I think the lawyers do that at the appropriate time. When we get permits. They don't do it all before you. I mean, if you can't get permitted, then, you know, we have, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal bills. Okay. But
yeah,
they do that when the time is right.
Okay. So Okay. If the IRS says, no, this is not a charitable activity, does that mean that we lose the support of FAME?
I don't know. We'd have to ask FAME that.
Okay.
FAME is supportive of this structure that we've proposed. And they've made a ruling on that. You can contact FAME and they'll explain it to you.
I have seen that. So it's not your understanding. It's what you're saying, that they can't be involved in this if this is not a charitable activity.
I don't know.
Okay. So if they can't, how will that impact your plans?
It would be a taxable bond package at a higher interest rate.
Can you do that?
I don't know. You know, the benefit of the tax-free municipal bond package is multi. Number one, it's lower interest rates. Number two, the ownership of the whole property goes to the county when the bonds are paid off. And then number three, if there's any excess income, it goes to charitable contributions around the state of Maine.
Not just in the county?
Not just in the county. They are charitable entities that I think Provident designates. People come to Provident mm-hmm. and say, hey, we have this charity. We'd like to participate in the excess funding that flows out of the bottom of the funnel.
Okay. And as a side note, in your pre-file testimony, and I think someplace else I had seen that there are a couple of options that at the end of this, the property could be retained by Provident or it could be sold as well.
That's up to the county commissioners.
Okay. Do you have information on what the percentage of debt service on the municipal bonds is to be paid by the TIF revenues that you will realize from the county's property tax collections on the entire development, which includes the residential units arena?
We do. It's all blended into the long-term financial forecast, and it's roughly 30%.
Of the entire TIF revenues that you expect to realize, what percentage is projected to be generated by tax increments on the properties where the 457 residential units will be located?
100%. That's all in the TIF that was approved by the county and by the state.
Okay.
The state has copies of that through the DECD. Because the core infrastructure, the hotel and the base lodge, are tax exempt.
Okay, all right.
Again, it's all in the TIF package that was done, I don't know, a year and a half ago.
Okay. So there have been several, as you mentioned earlier, several different totals for project cost estimates. We've had, in the TIF application, it was $53.4 million in the original filing. That was in March of 2021. It was $113.5 million. And this year in March, it was up to $126.3 million, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So what will be the source of the funds to cover the difference between the $126.3 million and the $66.8 million that you expect to realize through the county's payment to the TIF fund? The 66.
The 30-year operational revenues.
From?
All of the different revenue streams involved with the mountain.
Okay. So that includes the marina, that includes 400-some-odd residential units.
It's all connected. Sale of
the property.
Yes.
Okay. Does that include, there are a couple of other miscellaneous items that for my purposes I removed from my definition of phase one because I was a little bit confused with things. So that also excludes outdoor center, park areas, and possibly the night sky viewing that have been eliminated from this permit application.
No, the night sky is still in. The outdoor center is taken out. What was the other one?
The park areas.
The park, those are nonprofit free access to the outdoors for people.
Okay.
It's all there. It's a picnic park. It's a sunrise park. It's a sunset park. It's a dog park. It's a, those are just three access points.
They are, outside. But they still won't be developed, correct? So they're not adding to the profit, but they're not developed.
They're not profit centers. They're not profit right. centers. No.
But they are out of this permit. Last I read.
I think we left in a couple of the parks. I'd have to ask Stacy for clarification on.
No, I think
that all the parks were removed. Yeah. But they weren't making money anyway.
Right.
They're an attraction to get people outside is what we're trying to do.
Okay. Which I appreciate. Okay. And have the tables in Exhibit D1 of the TIF application been updated to reflect your new costs?
Not since the TIF was approved, no.
Okay. When does that happen? Presumably that has to happen.
I think that happens a little later in the process. Again, these are all the projections that are included in the feasibility study and that Barclays is looking at.
So.
I've never done a TIF. My partner Sarah, it helped us with that process, but I think it's a target to start. And I think it evolves over time. Those are estimates based on increased property tax values, right?
Right.
So it's not hard fast numbers. It starts with estimates is what we think might happen.
Question. And what's the total amount of the debt service on the bonds to finance the construction of phase one that you will be obligated to satisfy?
I'm not obligated to satisfy any of them.
Developer.
The developer's not obligated to finance anything. None.
Do you know what the total amount of the debt service on all the bonds projected to be?
I do. I don't have the number with me. It is. It's keeps moving a little bit, but it's probably. $300 million. Don't quote me on that number, but I didn't bring my laptop. But it's, you know, over 30 years, that 5% to 7% interest.
Can you provide copies, knowing that things are in draft form at this point? Can you provide copies of the two credit enhancement agreements between the county and you?
No, they haven't been drafted yet. They wait until things are further along.
Okay.
First, Dean Shore drafts those.
Okay. So that will wait till we're further. It's so, and I understand the issue with receiving the permit versus getting the financing in place and the issues with the time. Is it correct that the credit enhancement agreements put an onus, not an onus, but put a significant burden on the county financially if something should fail?
I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying.
Is it correct that the credit enhancement agreements may put a burden, place a burden on the county if the project fails?
I don't know the answer to that one.
Do you or will you have a performance surety bond guaranteeing that PC Construction will complete construction of the project according to the terms and conditions of the contract under which it has been contracted?
There are portions of the PC contract that are bonded. I don't believe it's the entire package.
And the bonding or a letter confirming the bonding be made part of the public record?
Not now. No, not this time. We haven't signed the agreement with PC Construction.
Okay. All right.
This is a process.
I understand.
It doesn't all happen. It isn't, we're not building a house. This is a long process, including that the LEPC and DEP suggested to us in pre-application meetings that we split it into two parts. And we do this first part, which is part of the LEPC now, because, well, we thought it was going to go a little more quickly. And the DEP process is going to take a little longer. And so none of this funding happens. There's no financial risk to anyone other than us until those permits are secure.
Okay.
And we have always expected a public hearing on the DEP process. There'll be a chance for everybody to look at the whole plan and go through that process as we get there.
Right.
We were trying to open for skiing. And so, you know, this public hearing process has cost us a construction season and at least a ski season. And it could cost more. You know, I understand the public has a right to know all this, but this isn't a public business. This is a private business. It's going to own and operate the mountain. It's sold through a bond package, but it's not any different than the local grocery store that's a private business. That, you know, we don't know, we don't have a say over what he sells the product for, and neither does, you know, the state of Maine used to own this. They ran for a long time, but they don't own it anymore. They don't want to own it because we asked them if they'd like to own it, and they don't want to own it. I asked both Governor LePage and Governor Mills, do you want to own this? And they said no. So it's a private business, like any other private business that the LEPC owns.
It is a private business, but the commission also must determine that there is financial capacity for this project to be developed. And you're asking a lot.
And what we're saying is that what's in this permit application, if it's approved, will all be funded at once.
Okay.
So they'll all be built out. It's the only way the bond market will do this. Is if it's all funded and they know that that infrastructure is there to generate those revenue streams to pay those bonds back at least two times over 30 years.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the reason it was separated into two phases is what?
DEP and LEPC said that's the best way to do it.
And why?
2 years ago.
Why did they say that? Do you know?
Because this first part was presumed to be quicker. We thought the LUPC had a 60-day window to turn around a completed application for approval. That was 24 months ago. When I spoke with Stacy's predecessor, Judy East, and we submitted the application, she thought, yeah, we can turn this around pretty quickly. And so the bond market took a look at that and said, yeah, okay, there's a lot of support for this. We think you'll get your permits. Let's keep going forward. Let's spend time and money and energy on this.
Okay.
Let's do the studies. Let's put their team resources into this. And you know, Barclays has put a lot into this based on the fact that they felt, we told them there was a lot of support for this project. We told them that the state of Maine used to own it and is suing the current owner to open it. Mm-hmm. But right now, the way it stands, you can't put in a chairlift. Nobody can put in a chairlift, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody can put in a base lodge. Nobody can put in a sewer system.
So, and the fact that you could open it up sooner is a factor as well.
It's a huge factor.
In the winter.
Because
okay,
now there's a war in Ukraine. And yeah, steel prices have gone up.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Leo. Thank you for your candor. Thank you for your questions. It sheds a lot of light as well. My question to you is, in regards to, typically when you look at a, let's say a limited partnership, Okay. And where I'm going with this is typically it helps clarify other investors in terms of who's going to invest and how much they're going to invest. What percentage of investors do you have in this outside of Barclays? Do you have private investors, possibly even yourself? And what this tells me is you've got skin in the game.
We, my group,
yes,
including our what I'll call partners in engineering, architectural, design, legal, have a little over $2 million into this right now, completely at risk, all our own funds. And so we're not capable of funding the whole thing ourselves. It's a big project. When we started, when I first looked at this 4 years ago, we thought 40 million would do it, maybe 50 million would do it.
Sure.
You know, because I knew chairlift pricing, I knew snow, I thought I knew snowmaking pricing, I didn't.
Well, the ball has moved too.
Say again?
The ball has moved.
Yeah.
Consider.
Snowmaking, I'll tell you, was the biggest surprise for me. To you know, I in my early estimates, I was carrying $2.5 million for snowmaking because I got a pump station estimate, right. But I didn't understand the cost of putting 8 miles of snowmaking pipe underground and buying all the guns. It's $8 to $12 million, depending on how many trails you want to cover. And that was before steel prices went up. So there's no sense putting in a chairlift if you don't have snowmaking. It just, you know, winter's getting warmer, season's getting shorter, and people want to ski at Christmas. And there may be no snow. So, you know, if you're going to support your staff and your obligations, you have to have snow. So you have to put in a nice snowmaking system.
And I'm assuming your group is going to hold an equity position.
In the residential real estate, not in the land and the ownership of the resort. No.
Okay.
That's all Provident, that's all nonprofit.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners? Does the applicant have any redirect?
Yeah, I guess my one question is, aren't you just trying to kill this deal? I mean, if you say you're supportive, but.
Mr. Williams, I think the presiding officer asked you to redirect, not recross.
Okay.
Which would be provide more testimony following the cross-examination.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess that I go back to the pre-applications we had with LEPC and DEP and laid out the whole plan and even before the current administration was in place, I met with the DEP and the LEPC and I asked, you know, if we jump into this and put our time and money into this, can we do what we want to do? And the answer was, absolutely, Perry, you can do that. Yes, the state wants this to happen. So that gave us a lot of confidence early on that, you know, then we met with the local groups and everybody was supportive. So we're a little surprised that there's a group that wants to kill the deal. And time kills deals. So it's not an easy deal. It's very complex. I really thought we'd find some other funding mechanism. I didn't even know about bond packages when we started this. It's a very challenging project. We really want to make it work. We've got a lot of time and money invested in it, and we hope it can work.
Commissioner, may I respond to that?
No, I guess.
I think that's the discretion of the presiding officer.
Make your statement.
I would like to be clear that once again, we are in support of this. That upon reviewing the application the first time and subsequent documents, things have changed dramatically. There are different numbers, there are errors, there are omissions, and there were. And so the more questions that we came up with in reviewing, the more we started looking at the details. That's where this comes from. It is not because we are opposed to this. And I am sorry. I apologize if that you feel that way. All we are looking for is something that will work in Greenville and won't be abandoned or fall apart. Not that you would intend to do that. We don't think you would.
Any other questions, comments from the commissioners before I move on? Thank you for your testimony. The hearing record will remain open until August 20th, 2022 at 5 p.m. to allow the public and parties to file written statements with the commission, and until August 27th, 2022 at 5 p.m. to file statements in rebuttal of those filed by the August 20th deadline. Comments during this period should be sent via email or postal mail to Debbie Kozowski, as directed in the hearing notice. This hereby concludes the hearing of the Land Use Planning Commission on Big Lake Development Company LLC's application for the proposed redevelopment of the Big Moose Mountain Ski Resort in Big Moose Township in Piscataquis County.
Thank you.